fuck you! Australia! Germany! Africa!
Here we go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. You know, it is the mark of a great holiday. It is a mark of the growth of a holiday in this country when it becomes a multi-purpose holiday. This is the 16th day of January 2017. This is the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday edition of the Horn. Yes. And it is, and what I was saying, you know, take Independence Day, for example, which is rather an ironic holiday to talk about on this particular holiday. Independence Day, the 4th of July, celebrates rather inaccurately, the 4th of July, 1776, when members of the Continental Congress signed the Declaration of Independence, consequently the name, from Great Britain. But over the years, it has become more than simply a celebration of independence. Most people don't even call it Independence Day anymore. They simply call it 4th of July. And so this holiday, you know, and on Independence Day we have barbecues and it's the height of summer and people go out to parks and they cook out and get together with family and they have beer and sweet iced tea and Kool-Aid and people, you know, fire up the smoker and all sorts of, you know, good fun, fellowship, good times. And a lot of times the excuse for the party overwhelms the actual meaning of the holiday. You know, it's a great time for, it's the big 4th of July blowout sale down at Fred's Ford Chrysler Jeep Chevrolet BMW Hyundai Toyota, etc. Come on by. We've got gifts for the kiddies and balloons and hot dogs and great deals on cars. And it becomes multi-purposed by as a means of advancing, you know, capitalist retail ideas. And it's a mark of the nationalization and the enculturation, I guess, of a holiday when the same thing begins to happen with any particular holiday. And of course, the big key to getting the MLK Day holiday through federally was being able to make it a Monday holiday in January that could be pitched as a 3-day holiday in which the retailers could capitalize on a 3-day weekend that falls between, say, Christmas and New Year's, and then the holiday period of like Valentine's Day, President's Day, Washington's birthday, etc. Lincoln's birthday, that right. And so it is. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. And so it is that over the few short years that the Martin Luther King Jr. Day Memorial Holiday has been in full force and effect, we have learned that this too has reached a certain not plateau, but a benchmark of national acceptance, because this holiday has multiple meanings and multiple levels. It's a holiday where conservatives can forget that there was a strong, full-throated, anti-capitalist message to what was then preached by Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. before he was assassinated. It is an opportunity for this, what I refer to as the Santa Clausization of Dr. King. Because it's the only thing white wingers remember he ever said is that, you know, you judge a man by the content of his character, not by the color of his skin, which white wingers then think leaves them open to sort of get back to their old discriminating ways. But more than anything else, I mean, and in a way it shares, this is reminiscent of, say, Valentine's Day, because Valentine's Day has its roots in ancient Rome, as most Christian holidays do, and then it got repurposed by the Christians, and there was some bloodshed involved, and then we get chocolates and flowers. And the same thing has begun to happen with the MLK Jr. Day holiday, because this is now a holiday in which we find out, it's sort of a who's a racist asshole holiday. Racist version of the old card game Old Maid, in which one finds out just who's a racist dick. For instance, on the MLK Jr. holiday weekend, we found out, as if anybody was wondering, that Donald J. Trump is a big old dick, because he used his tiny little fingers on his cell phone keyboard to attack a young follower of Dr. King, who nearly got his head completely bashed in Selma, and was repeatedly arrested in civil rights protests across the United States. And I'm talking, of course, about John Lewis, whom, in a tweet, Benito Cheeto declared was all talk and no action, so said. Mm-hmm. But there's more than just Trump. Now, that, of course, created quite a firestorm of controversy, with the Atlanta Journal-Constitution asking, how dare you, because he said some really nasty things about Atlanta, which is, in fact, a lovely and livable, apart from the traffic part, American city. Right? Yeah. But it wasn't just Trump. But it was, but, you know, there, I, I don't know. I mean, do we come up with something? Oh, by the way, this is Moran Monday. Did I neglect to mention that? Yeah, this is Moran Monday, the 16th of January, 2017, MLK Day edition. And an early nominee simply has to be Republican Gwinnett County Board of Commissioners member Tommy Hunter. Mm-hmm. Tommy Hunter is from Gwinnett County, which is a county next door to the counties that primarily make up Atlanta, namely Fulton, Cobb, and DeKalb County, Georgia. Gwinnett County is that county which first sent, in a desperate effort to get him the hell out of their county and get some relief, first sent Professor Dr. Newton Leroy Gingrich to the House of Representing. That would be amateur paleontologist Dr. Professor Newton Leroy Gingrich. And I guess they just breed them down there. Because after the controversy, what the controversy was, is that, John Lewis said he would not be attending the inauguration because with all of the nasty, vile, filthy, verifiable things that Donald Trump, the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini, has said, with the decidedly disturbing interference in the electoral process, as documented by 17 intelligence agencies in the United States, by Russia, and with the various and sundry electoral shenanigans that took place, he does not consider Donald J. Trump to be a legitimate president. This, of course, caused Donald J. Trump to have a poop hemorrhage, at which point he took to the Twitters, because Donald J. Trump truly is, in the words of Carol Baker, Queen of the Minions, Trumple thin skin. And thus did Tommy Hunter jump out onto social media on his Facebook page to declare, John Lewis is a racist pig. There ain't one political pundit that didn't say on November 9th that this would be Democrats' exact response to Trump winning. Like I heard Rush, I believe, say, demon rats. No, that's what he said. Demonrats. Do not live in reality. They believe polls were right and the real votes were wrong. What a bunch of idiots. And having said that, and it's not like you're limited to 140 characters on Facebook. He just had to keep thanking. Thank. And he had to jump back out there on the Facebook again. John Lewis's district is drawn to keep him in power. His wins are all illegitimate. How can other reps be concerned about working with him? Mm-hmm. Which is a little bit humorous, given the fact that the entirety of the Republican majority in the House of Representing, with a few notable exceptions, exists because of districts drawn to keep Republicans in power. Otherwise, how could election in and election out, how could Democratic candidates for the House of Representatives receive an aggregate vote total far in excess of that received by Republicans, and yet the Republicans maintain a majority in the House of Representatives. I know. But it is more and Monday. And I think we would be severely remiss if we let Tommy Hunter of the Gwinnett County Board of Commissioners draw a pass just because he's just a member of the Gwinnett County Board of Commissioners. I'm sure that Tommy Hunter goes to sleep most every night dreaming of the day when he can be part of that permanent Republican majority there in the House of Representatives in Washington, D.C., because after all, I'm sure he believes in small government, just not a government so small that it don't include him. You see how it works? I had to kind of get that out of the way, because this really is for celebrating the life of a brilliant man, and the celebrating the life of a brilliant man whose efforts, without whose efforts, the modest gains we have made toward something resembling social, cultural, and political equality for an entire class of people might likely not have been realized. This is a time for reflection. And for appreciation and for attempting to understand history and the modern march towards something resembling decency, towards which we still have a long way to go. It is a time for remembering more than the I Have a Dream speech. It's a time for going and looking up the Riverside Church speech. And it's also a time for noting how far we have yet to go. I should note before we go much further that profound thanks go out today to Yukio, who has put forward a challenge this evening, a $250 Have a Show on Me challenge for this Martin Luther King Jr. Day holiday broadcast. Yukio is asking that her $250 be matched by $250 coming in from other members of the Horn Family Community Congregation. And thank you so much, Yukio. I got a message yesterday evening. Saying simply, I can't tell you what a relief it is that you are on air. And so she is calling on other members of the community to match what she has put forward so that we get a jump start on the coming week. Thank you again, Yukio, so very, very, very much. Because this is how we provide a home going forward for the resistance. Because it is the 16th day of January, and the 20th will be here before we even know it. And then the fecal tsunami that is the Trump administration will be upon us, and we will need a place to carry on conversation about what is happening, how we're resisting it, and what we plan to do, frankly, to try to undermine it. A number of members of the House of Representatives, for instance, are following the lead of Representative John Lewis and publicly announcing that they will not attend the inauguration. Co-sponsor of the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act, Judy Chu of California, as well as Representative Roybal Allard, have both said, sorry, we're not going. For the very reason of the vile nature, the hateful, ignorant nature of the man who is about to enter the White House. I mean, for God's sakes, as far as remarks are concerned about this particular holiday, the best that Herr Twitler could muster is to call on all Americans today to celebrate the really good things that Dr. King did. Yeah. You really, really good things. Don't celebrate like the little things or the mediocre things. Celebrate the really good things that he did. Which, of course, provides the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini an out as to what he thinks the good things that Dr. King did were. Well, you know, when you come right down to it, the best thing he ever did was die. Eh? Want to bet? You can almost hear, you can hear him saying it, can't you? Sure you can. Because one of the things that Dr. King helped bring about was the Federal Fair Housing Act, which a few years later necessitated Donald J. Trump and his nasty old Klansman daddy, because that's the truth, being sued by the federal government for refusing to rent their properties to people whose skin color they found objectionable. And I ain't talking about white. Yeah, originally it was announced that he would visit the African American History Museum in Washington, D.C. But then they declared that no, he wouldn't. Because, I don't know, maybe somebody inside the Trump transition team is an actual high-ranking cleric in the Church of the Goddess of Irony, like me. Not that I'm on the transition team, but that I'm a high-ranking official in the Church of the Goddess of Irony, because I say so. And realized that if Donald J. Trump were to set his foot across the threshold in the Museum of African American History in Washington, D.C., that the Goddess of Irony might cause a big bucket of tar and a great big bag of feathers to materialize out of nowhere and be poured all over him. Question is, would the orangeness still glow through the tar and the feathers? But no, he didn't, so no. But over the weekend, there was something out there. There was something that I would really like to have seen. Lin-Manuel Miranda, who has become one of the most well-known faces and stars of Broadway because of his the production of his play Hamilton, gathered at Riverside Church to pay homage to Dr. King last year. As Hamilton was just catching, really catching the imagination of the country. And it was there that Lin-Manuel Miranda did a dramatic reading of the Beyond Vietnam speech. And I thought it would be appropriate maybe just to run a tiny little snippet of that, because that's what we've got, is a tiny little snippet.
We will be able to speed up the day all over America and all over the world when justice will roll down like waters and righteousness like a mighty stream. Dr. Martin Luther King at this church. We will be able to speed up the day.
And that was April 4th, 1967, a year before he would be murdered. I don't know, because I don't have kids in school now, how they are teaching this holiday. There are places where you honestly don't know if they are teaching the meaning behind this holiday. For instance, let us go to Biloxi, Mississippi, where I guess the state of Mississippistan is not entirely too keen on this holiday. Because once the controversy began, the city of Biloxi, Mississippistan, Mizzatrumpistan, because they're a very Trumpy state, Mississippi is. They Trumpy, but they nowhere near as Trumpy as West Trump, Virginia is. We own the title of Trumpiest state in the Union, and we will fight anybody that says we ain't. But apparently, at some point in time, the legislature of Trumpississippi, Mississippi, got together to make sure that those people remembered their place. Because in Mississippi, this holiday is in fact not recognized as Martin Luther King Jr. Day. The city of Biloxi on Friday the 13th, this past, posted on Facebook, "Non-emergency municipal offices in Biloxi will be closed on Monday in observance of Great Americans Day." Not really. Great Americans Day. Later on, although they disappeared it, whoever put that page up edited the post and said, "Great Americans Day is a state-named holiday, and it includes Martin Luther King Jr. Day." Great Americans Day. Now, here's the funny thing. If you go to the state of Mississippi, website and you start looking up their state holidays, you find out, and in a way, this is even worse. At the website of Delbert Hoseman, Secretary of State of the state of Mississippi, you find out that the third Monday in January is officially, in the eyes of the state of Trumpississippi, Martin Luther King's and Robert E. Lee's birthday. See, that way everybody has something to celebrate, you understand. Those people can celebrate that man, and decent, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered white people can celebrate the birthday, the official state holiday birthday of Robert E. Lee. And see, both of them was great Americans. So we'll just call it Great Americans Day. The only difference being that one of those two Americans had to be restored to his American citizenship, having thrown it out the window in order to make war against the United States. And hint, that wasn't Dr. King. Like I said, it's becoming, it already is, and becomes a more and more important holiday because it has multiple meanings for different people. Great Americans Day. Yes. So, we've got that going on this Moran Monday on the horn. Note coming in from Steve, a member of the fraternity of Steve. One vote lost, all votes lost. I was so happy when John Lewis announced his decision, especially as he based this on the perceived legitimacy of the electoral process and not merely the fitness of the candidate. A courageous voice is always heard, even at a whisper. Which brings me to something I shall refrain from expressing with exclamation points appended. What a shameful disgrace that our Electoral College saw fit to be derelict in their constitutionally mandated duty when they decided not to confirm the winner of the popular vote. Not Hillary Clinton, mind, but the legitimate victor in the election. None of the above, Steve? Regards, Steve in China. I think Steve might be, now maybe I'm wrong. I think Steve might be referring, though, to the fact that during the election in November, more people stayed home than went to the polls, thereby making none of the above the clear winner. James writes in and says, subject line, ask Trump. Trump wants brownie points for putting one black person to his cabinet, even though no consideration for qualifications to that post were ever established. Ask him what he would think about having his daughter go to dinner with that man's son and all that that would imply. Yeah, no. As the saying goes, let's don't, and say we didn't. By the way, as we move ever closer, ever perilously, ever more terrifyingly close to this coming Friday, an announcement. It appears that people who were heading to Washington, D.C. with the express hope of hearing America's greatest Bruce Springsteen cover band, namely the B Street Band, play, well, you're out of luck. Sorry. The B Street Band has since declared that it will not be performing in celebration of the inauguration of Donald J. Trump. Among other things, out of an abundance of respect for the man who, upon whose work they depend for their livelihood, Bruce Springsteen. They're out, but if you're looking for a real party and you're going to D.C., you might want to check out the National Cathedral. Because the Washington National Cathedral, which is actually an Episcopal church, the Washington National Cathedral has declared itself to be a part of the inaugural festivities. This is not going over well. It's not going over well at all. It was earlier this month when the Washington National Cathedral announced that in addition to hosting the traditional interfaith prayer service that they always host on the day after the inauguration, it is going to send the church's choir of men, boys, and girls, and why aren't there any women, to participate in Trump's official inaugural, you know, the ceremonies thereof. They're also going to do the Saturday prayer service afterward. Now, when they had their Saturday prayer service for Barack Obama, there was a sermon, and there was a lead preacher, cleric, minister, what have you. Well, apparently they couldn't find a preacher who was willing to preach the post-inaugural sermon, but they did manage to pimp out their fairly well-known and respected choir of men, boys, and girls, and no women. I mean, really, that's the name of the choir. The Choir of Men, Boys, and Girls. To celebrate the ascension to the most important office on the planet of a vulgar little real estate grubber. This is not going over particularly well inside the Episcopal Church. Because, well, the Episcopal Church in the United States has established itself over time as being one of the so-called dominant Christian denominations in the United States, which has one of the loudest voices in regard to speaking out for the LGBTQ community, speaking out against the demonization and discrimination against Muslim people, using its voice to speak in favor of our immigrant population, who, after all, are largely responsible for feeding the entire country. Yeah, I'm still kind of out there looking for some good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered white Trumpansies who, after all the undocumented immigrants are rounded up and put in camps and then quietly disappeared somehow, still trying to find the Trumpansies who want to go out there and pick lettuce for a couple of bucks a day in California, or pick those baseball-sized things that are occasionally referred to as tomatoes in Florida, or oranges, or strawberries, or peaches in Georgia and Alabama and South Carolina. Mm-hmm. The Episcopal Church has spoken up for immigrant rights. Meanwhile, of course, whether it be the LGBTQ community, whether it be Muslims, whether it be immigrants, all of these things, all of these people, all of these groups have been routinely and regularly attacked, not only by Trump himself, but by his alt-white, neo-Nazi Klansmen and supporters who, of course, knew all about all that and looked the other way. When one has a cathedral, one has a dean, to oversee it, to run it. For instance, Jonathan Swift, who wrote Gulliver's Travels, he was the dean, an Anglican dean of a cathedral at one point in time. He is sometimes referred to technically as Dean Swift. And, up until last year, Gary Hall, I'm sorry, 2015, I'm still in 2016, you'll have to forgive me. Up until 2015, Gary Hall was the dean of the Washington National Cathedral. Think Progress contacted him, and he said, "I'm just so sad that the cathedral wasn't able to say no to the president-elect. I think there's a real difference between praying for the president and endorsing the president. This will have the effect of legitimizing his presidency, which is something I don't think the Christian community should give him." Is it okay if I give a little bit of cowbell to Gary Hall, former dean of the Washington National Cathedral, for displaying actual morals and doing so as a Christian? In his interview, Gary Hall went on to say that that Benito Chito, quote, "violates any possible norm of Christian faith and practice." And that's a pretty profound statement, isn't it? Now, I mean, we're not talking about norms in the way of things that the Christian community ought not do, but does anyway. We're talking about the things that actually Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi, said his followers should do. You know, tend to the sick, give shelter to the homeless, feed the hungry, be welcoming of all people. And Trump violates everything that Jesus H. Christ ever taught about. Dean Hall went on and said, "I think we're just at a watershed moment in American Christianity and our relation to the state as a culture. I would not have held the inaugural prayer service, nor would I have allowed the choir to sing, because the positions Trump has taken are so inimical to the gospel. I know it's been our tradition to do it, but this is a really different kind of candidacy and presidency, and it's a time, really, for the church to be the resistance to this kind of authoritarianism instead of legitimizing it by allowing it to use the symbols of Christianity." Meanwhile, the bishop of the Episcopal Diocese of Washington, one Reverend Marian Budde, B-U-D-D-E, no clue, said that, she had a different take on it. And she said, speaking of She said, and I said that if asked, Washington National Cathedral would host an interfaith inaugural prayer service in January. As that day approaches, many in our church and in our land question Dean Hollerith's and my willingness to host an inaugural prayer service for one whose behavior and words have been so offensive and divisive. We also have been asked why we accepted the invitation for the cathedral choristers to sing as part of the musical prelude to the inauguration when so many other artists and performers on principle declined that invitation. First, I want to acknowledge the anger and disappointment that our decisions have engendered, and to say that I'm listening because the spiritual principles that move many of you to protest are essential for the work that lies ahead. While I do not ask you to agree, I simply ask you to consider that we, too, acted on spiritual principles. Those principles, while they may seem to conflict with yours, are also essential for the work that lies ahead. We welcome all people into our houses of prayer. We welcome all because we follow a Lord and Savior who welcomes all without qualification, even though the man we're inaugurating as the President of the United States has referred to some people who do a lot of vital work in the United States as rapists and not their country's best. No. No, she didn't say that. No, she just said essential for the work that lies ahead. Well, I do not ask you to agree. I simply... work. These principles, while they may seem to conflict with yours, are also essential for the work that lies ahead. Finally, Dean Hollerith and I decided to host an interfaith prayer service and to accept the invitation for the cathedral choristers to sing before the inauguration itself as a gift. A gift. At a time when emotions are raw, we hope to offer a few moments of spiritual solace and the healing gift of transcendent beauty. We also want the nation to know that we're still here as people of hope. Well, D.C. needs a sign around it for this Friday that says, "Abandon hope, all ye who enter here." Wasn't that the sign in front of the entrance to hell in was it Paradise Lost by Milton or Dante's Inferno? I can't remember which. Fresh out of hope, Bishop. While the inauguration is a civic rather than a religious ceremony, it is also an occasion for prayer and an opportunity to offer the balm of beauty. Disgusting. What this boils down to is Bishop Marion Edgar Booty's buds, no clue. What this amounts to is her saying, no, really, we recognize that this cathedral runs on donations, and we recognize that there are within our church a considerable number of trumpansies with deep pockets, and no, really, we want you to keep giving, okay, please? I mean, granted, our church is supposed to stand for stand against everything you freaks stand for, but we still need you to give. See, I remember when the Episcopal Diocese dropped the hammer on Episcopals who wanted to support the end of mountaintop removal here in Appalachia. I mean, Trumpalachia now. And you know what? It had its intended effect. But when you think, as Meryl Streep pointed out, about the... disgusting display of mockery that thin-skinned little pissant displayed for people with disabilities. When I initially read this story about the National Cathedral being defamed and disgraced by participating in the inauguration of this monstrosity, I was reminded of something that happened several years ago. I should note that in Washington, D.C., for instance, when you cross the Key Bridge across the Potomac from Rosslyn, Virginia, into the district, takes you into Georgetown, there's a lovely view, and you can see at a great distance the spire of the National Cathedral, which took forever to freaking build. It's a Gothic cathedral, and Gothic cathedrals take forever to build. It's a beautiful sight. And this was when Ferg was and the rest of our kids were just entering into their young activism against mountaintop removal, and we had been to Washington, D.C. to engage in efforts to convince lawmakers to please stop poisoning and killing hillbillies. Well, a couple of years before we went, Ferg had studied the life of Helen Keller and her teacher, Annie Sullivan. And he was deeply moved. It was, I think, 2006. And he was still, well, I mean, he was 11 years old at the time. Wow. 21-year-old man now. These are the sorts of things that stay in a parent's mind. But we had, his grandfather was still alive, and we had taken my father, his grandfather, down to his home in Alabama for a while. And having studied Helen Keller, he knew that she was born and raised at a place just across the river from where I grew up called Ivy Green. And the one thing he wanted to do while he was down there, I mean, we went and got an orange pineapple ice cream at a ice cream and soda shop that's been open since like 1901. We got those awesome hot dogs and barbecues at that barbecue joint. I showed him the sights. He was old for the first time. He was old enough to appreciate some of them. Showed him the singing river. But more than anything else, he wanted to go to Ivy Green. And it was March, and it was still pretty cold. But I took him, and I showed him the huge live oaks where story has it that Helen Keller would climb the trees and just sit in the tree for a while. Until her parents found her. And we went through the house, which is a shrine to her life. But most of all, he wanted to see the pump. And there's a railing around the pump. Nobody touches the pump. And nobody certainly pumps the pump. I don't even know if there's still water in it. Tuscumbia is a very well-watered area and famous for its big spring. But when we walked out there with the guide, I didn't ask, and neither did he. He just stood there talking about the miracle, as it's referred to, that happened at that pump when, with water rushing over her hand, Helen Keller, who, since an onset of scarlet fever as an infant, had been unable to hear and unable to speak and unable to see, had the letters W-A-T-E-R, water, spelled into her hand as the water rushed over her hand. And calling up some remnant of memory from before she was stricken blind, deaf, and mute, said simply, water. And that moment grabbed something inside Ferg's being. And he, in his own 11-year-old way, waxed eloquent. 10-year-old, really. 10-year-old. He wouldn't be 11 until December. And that somehow moved the lady there, who opened that rail, invited him in, and invited him to lay his hand upon that pump. And it is a memory that remains with him to this day. So a few years later, when we went to Washington, D.C., to work on the AIC Act, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act, Ferg, in that city of history and art, galleries, museums, the only thing he was really interested in doing was going to the National Cathedral, because he simply wanted to pay homage at the tomb of Helen Keller and Annie Sullivan. And I found out that year that it is damnably difficult to get to the National Cathedral. There's no metro line anywhere nearby. And what you wind up having to do is take a cab. And this we did. And we paid the requisite amount of money to get into the cathedral. Walked around it a little bit, but his goal, he was single-minded in his goal. He wanted to go to the crypt, and he wanted to see the last resting place of the mortal remains of Helen Keller and her teacher, Annie Sullivan. You know, it's an irony that no one, least of all we his parents, knew at the time that Ferg is mostly deaf. I don't even know if he knew. But he is. And I will say, because I talked about it when I got back, got on the air again, he was appalled. Because to have one's last mortal remains entombed at something as grand and magnificent as the National Cathedral, one would think would be a tremendous honor. Instead, most of the people who are entombed there are behind racks of postcards and cough drops and pennants and buttons and gimcracks and gee-jaws. And it really, really, it was pretty offensive to me, but it damn near broke Ferg's heart. And so when I ran across this story about the deliberate decision to make the national, to politicize the National Cathedral and have it openly participate in the inauguration of this disgusting proto-fascist tyrant wannabe, And I thought about what Meryl Streep had brought up at her Golden Globes speech. The way Trump mocks the disabled. I remembered that moment in the National Cathedral when he finally set eyes upon the last resting place of the mortal remains of Helen Keller. And for a moment, I wished I believed in vengeful spirits. Because you see, if such were real, the moment his foot crossed the threshold into that cathedral where lie the last mortal remains of Helen Keller, her shade would rise from the grave, zombie-like, and bring hell with her, and heaven too, to confront that disgusting specimen of an attempt at a member of the human species for which Helen Keller had, though she could not speak, spoken so passionately, so intelligently, and so eloquently. Because, see, it's not just the cathedral that this bishop and the current dean are pimping out. They're pimping out the bones of people who would be repulsed by even the remotest idea of a person like Donald J. Trump. Taking the reins of this government. And I mention Helen Keller for a separate reason. There is no Helen Keller Day as there is a Martin Luther King Jr. Day. But there is, at the request of the state of Trump-Obama, a statue of her in the Congressional Hall of Statuary. And when it came time to create the state quarters of several years back, the state of Alabama decided, well, no, we can't put George Wallace on the back, and we can't put a Klansman. Just, you know, it's not done these days, and I mean, there's. I mean, we can't put Hank Aaron, and I mean, you know, can't put Nat King Cole. Hey, I got an idea. Let's put Helen Keller on the back of the Alabama State Quarter, which they then did. And it was, of course, done with no sense of irony whatsoever. Because if one goes and reads the actual writings of Helen Keller, one finds that she was a dedicated socialist and no capitalist in the least, and was absolutely unafraid of what anybody would think or say about her positions relative to the poor, the disabled, the downtrodden, you know, all of the people that capitalism routinely defecates upon. And the same may be said of Dr. King. Because he was no lamb in the fleece. He he said things years later that Helen Keller herself had said in the earliest part of the 20th century. In 1952, he wrote to the woman who would be his wife, "I imagine you already know that I am much more socialistic in my economic theory than capitalistic. And yet I am not so opposed to capitalism that I have failed to see its relative merits. It started out with a noble and high motive, viz. To block the trade monopolies of nobles, but like most human systems, it fell victim to the very thing it was revolting against. So today, capitalism has outlived its usefulness. It has brought about a system that takes necessities from the masses to give luxuries to the classes." This, of course, drove people like J. Edgar Hoover absolutely out of his, vicious mind. But you'll be hard-pressed to find anybody celebrating those words today. Just as the people of Alabama they don't like to talk about Miss Keller's unsavory socialist tendencies. Right? Of course. The state of Georgia had an opportunity to put Dr. King on the back of its state quarter, but they opted to simply put a peach on theirs. Right. Ron in Raleigh writing says, "But Bob, the Republicans say that MLK would be one of them." Oh, sure. Ask Anthrax Coulter. Martin Luther King was a registered Republican. Yeah, maybe that. Well, but that's, of course, back when Republicans, that's your pre-Nixon Southern strategy Republicans. That's the party of Lincoln, not the party of Nixon. Mm-hmm. So there's the filibobster for the evening. It's 8 minutes past the hour, 7 o'clock here in the Eastern Standard Time Zone. And we're going to see what we've got in the way of conversation. If you would like to participate in conversation radio, well, there's a couple of ways to go about doing it. The first is the stress line. Works for some, not for others. 304-663-HORN, 304-663-4676. And then there's the other line, 304-574-8178. And then Skype to Skype from anywhere on the planet, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn, if you'd like to jump in. Use any of those methods. And, well, the heart and soul of the resistance is the discussion about it. And I welcome you to participate. We've got a fundraising challenge on the table, courtesy of Yukio. And she's challenging people to match her $250 Have a Show on Me for this evening. That, of course, is 10 at 25 or 25 at 10, 1 at 250, 2 at 125, 4 at 6250, 8 at 31 and a quarter. And after that, my head starts hurting from the Zifrin. But please don't let a challenge like this just sit there. Our ability to raise these funds and keep the bills paid and keep this effort going are central to what we hope to have going forward. if you there's a nice new clean interface courtesy of John Fox at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute. If you prefer to use the United States Postal Service, well, the mailing address for checks and money orders made payable to the Horn, not Bob Kincaid. I never even touch them. I don't see them. That's all stuff that Boss Man Wayne does. The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801. I was also reminded by Fab that I am remiss in giving out the email address. If you wish to reach the program with an email, just send it to Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid, at gmail.com. So let's take a break, see what kind of conversation shapes up for this Moran Monday, which is also much more solemnly and respectfully Martin Luther King Jr. Day 2017. Let's see where the conversation takes us. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Resistance. This is The Horn. I was ready for that cold ending this time. No fade out there. Talking Heads and Blind. Let's see. It is 16 minutes past the hour. Thank you very kindly to Keith for getting us started this evening. We've now got only $240 to go to match Yukio's challenge. And in point of fact, I think we can probably, you know what? I think this is more than appropriate. Let's factor some things into that challenge. Let's start with Michael from earlier today. Thank you, Michael. See, that's 220. And let's include our subscribers. Chris in Maryland. That makes it 195. 175, courtesy of Reinhard in Virginia. 165, courtesy of Tim in Arizona. 155, thanks to Glenn in Rochester. And thank you very kindly, Laura, for making it 151.67. 151.67, thanks to our subscribers. Thank you very kindly indeed, one and all. So about $150 to go to meet Yukio's challenge. And that's just wonderful. Much obliged, one and all. Let's go over to the Skype line and check in with Scott and Punky. Hey, Scott.
Hello. Hey, Bob. Greetings and salutations from just west of downtown Oz.
Oz? Really?
Well, what the hell. It's Monday. That's the best I can do.
Well, I understand. I thought you were going to make some remark about greetings from another city that doesn't have an NFL team.
Oh, well, you know. Speaking
but
of
that's
that,
the problem. It's kind of it wasn't like you had one in the first place.
Exactly. Speaking of that, on the news the other night, the local news, let's see, 22 local moving companies plus 5 moving companies up in Los Angeles have set up a website, and they have refused to move the team from the offices and the equipment and the weight room and all that of the former San Diego Chargers, formerly known as the Deadbolts, from San Diego, their long-standing home, up to their new home in Los Angeles. And I think that's nifty.
Yeah,
that's,
this whole no-collaboration thing may be getting legs.
Well, maybe. But I saw that, and it kind of brightened up my otherwise drab and wretched weekend. So, but anyway...
Yeah, I heard that story earlier today, and I thought, well, you know, why not?
Yeah, and see,
because they're only what they're only moving because the ownership wants the taxpayers to front them a new multi-million-dollar mega sports complex. Is it that dodge again? I mean, is it that blackmail?
Well, yeah, and then the other part of it. It's the business of Spanos, the guy who's owned the team for a good long while, after the vote that the voters in November decided not to buy into his scam. It finally dawned on him that the voters are tired of paying for his multi-million-dollar business and, you know, have said basically collectively, let us off here. So he's going to greener pastures. He's going somewhere where he can scam somebody, hopefully.
Yeah. So what? I mean, the people of L.A. are going to take it in the shorts, not just for a place for the Lambs to play, but for the Deadbolts, too?
Well, that's the theory, but we'll see how it plays out.
Los Angeles, where terrible teams go to get new stadiums? I mean, is that what we're talking about here?
Well,
the L.A. contingent's going to be pissed now.
I don't know. I mean, you know, any con person, once the con has played out in where they are now, they'll go to find a new cache of suckers, I guess. Maybe that's the theory. But the people that set up this website of the moving companies here in San Diego and a few up in L.A. who are refusing to move the Chargers organization up the road took a page from a similar action in Baltimore after that team skulked off in the dead of night some years ago for Cleveland. And in the wake of that fiasco, a lot of people in Baltimore made it a point when they had to move, you know, ordinary citizens, they made it a point to boycott the moving company that moved the former Baltimore Colts to Cleveland or wherever they
were. When Ursay took the beloved Colts and moved them to Indianapolis, of all places.
Okay, was it Indianapolis?
It was kind of a mercantilist triangle. Ursay took the Colts to Indianapolis, and then Art Modell took the Browns from the Cleveland and turned them into the Ravens, and then the Browns had to come up with a whole new team, which will probably suck, you know, for another generation or so before they ever get good. I mean, they won one football game this season, the Browns did.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. And that was a fluke, I think, wasn't it?
Probably. I mean, well, they were hopelessly bad.
Yeah. Well, that is the toy department. I'm not a real big sports fan, although I did watch my Kansas City Chiefs lose one last night in the big playoff game, having spent 10 years in Kansas City. And I learned the trick to get through a three-hour football game quickly. Capture the thing on your DVR and then fast forward, stopping only for the plays. Screw the halftime, screw the commercials, screw the analysis and the X's and O's and the arrows on the screen. Look at the plays, and you can watch a complete NFL game in something like 45 minutes. It's amazing.
Minus the ads and the right. I got to admit, I'm a pretty happy camper. I got my two wishes yesterday. The Steelers beat the Chiefs, and the Packers beat the Cowboys. There's never a bad time to watch the Dallas Cowboys lose a football game in my book, and it was particularly delightful because the baton has now apparently been passed from Tony Romo losing critical football games to Dak Prescott now losing critical football games and breaking the heart of Jerry Jones.
Well, I think misery loves company. There should be a lot of disappointed, brokenhearted people. If I'm going to be, then they ought to be. Screw them.
Feed them fish heads, exactly.
But anyway, that's the toy department. Let me tell you. Your comments during the what do you call that thing when you talk to Bob? Jesus, I'm having a brain fart. Your first
hour the filibuster.
The filibuster. Jesus, I'll be all right. And I'm sober as a judge. What the hell?
Well, see, there's your problem.
Maybe I need to whip up one of my wonderful martinis.
Yeah, but if you like it with two olives, it's awesome with three.
Exactly. Exactly. The several of your comments during the filibuster about your visit to Washington, D.C. and the National Cathedral kind of resonated with me.
Yeah, man, you can't get there from here.
Well, actually, there's a bus. I wish I could remember the bus.
Yeah, see, there is a bus, but I never managed the Byzantine intricacies of figuring out the D.C. bus lines.
Well, there is that. What was that?
I mean, God Almighty! I think it required a Ouija board.
2006?
Oh, no, no, no. This would be more like, no, this would, the cathedral visit would have been probably like 2013.
Yeah, well, see, maybe I'm thinking back to before Metro took it all over. There used to be three bus services. One was based in Alexandria, where I grew up. One was based in D.C., and one was based somewhere in suburban Maryland. And then when they were making plans for the subway, basically the governmental entity, business entity, government entity that made Metro, who's responsible for the subway and the local bus service, bought up the three regional bus companies so that they and the soon-to-be subway would all be under one umbrella known as Metro. And back before that happened, I used to have a pretty good handle on the D.C. bus lines, which ones took you where. But see, when Metro got a hold of it, it became, you know, rather cumbersome to figure out. Of course, now...
Well, there's just, there's different buses. I mean, there's one kind of bus, then there's another kind of bus. And I just had this nightmare vision of getting on one and, you know, winding up in Poughkeepsie.
Yeah. But... it's been too many years. I know that there was... See, when I used to go up to visit the NBC radio and TV place in D.C. as a youngster, I'd take the bus from the suburbs to 12th and Penn, right by the post office, which is now the Trump Hotel, and then walk across the way to about 14th and Penn, and then catch the bus that took me through. It was a hellacious long route. It took you all the way down Pennsylvania Avenue until it turned into M Street, which is technically Georgetown. And then you went down M Street until you got to Wisconsin Avenue, took a right there, and took this long, hellaciously long ride up Wisconsin Avenue, until you finally got to Wisconsin and Nebraska, which is where the NBC station was. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. I was calling about the Washington Cathedral.
Yes.
One of the benefits of growing up in the D.C. area in the 60s, and maybe even now, was the proximity that you were in to visit interesting places and go do interesting things. And two of the interesting places and things were the National Cathedral, and then in honor of Martin Luther King Day, something that happened a couple of years before that. But my visit to the cathedral was on a high school field trip around 69 or 70, or it might have been early 71. And you said it takes a long time to build a cathedral. They were still building that damn thing.
Oh, I think it's still under construction.
Oh, I wouldn't doubt it.
Because at the time we were there, they were doing some restoration. Because like a big windstorm had blown through,
yeah,
blown several large stones off of the spire.
The Lord is sending a message, boys.
Like I said, you know, the goddess of irony, you know, it was a warm up.
But yeah, and one of the problems the tour guide was telling us as we were visiting the cathedral was that many of the artisans who learned their trade, stonecraft and building cathedrals, were getting old and dying off, and the skills were not being passed down to new generations of artisans. And I don't know what role that played in the time it took to get the thing done, but that had some bearing on the progress, because this is not a Trump construction project. You just can't slap that thing together with, you know, concrete laced with oatmeal. You know, you've got to actually know what you're doing. But I remember seeing this. There was a stained glass window that had been constructed, the centerpiece of which contained a rock from one of the Apollo flights, a rock from the moon, supposedly. And there are a couple of presidents there. I forget which ones right offhand, but And I had forgotten about Helen Keller and Annie Sullivan.
Well, but they managed at least not to put those two behind a rack of postcards.
Well, that's good. That's good.
Because that really was kind of revolting.
Yeah, well, and see, you would, on one hand, you would think that a church would know better, but given the commercial nature of churches, given your earlier news item.
And by the way, it's Woodrow Wilson who's buried at the National Cathedral.
Yeah.
You know, the guy who was a big fan of a famous novel of the time called The Klansman.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I knew it was a president of that vintage, but I, you know, my memory cells. Well, hell, if I can't remember what you call the filibuster that happened less than an hour ago, how the hell am I going to remember Woodrow Wilson at the cathedral? But in terms of Martin Luther King Day, I sent you a link to something with about a dozen, little less than a dozen, radical quotes of Martin Luther King that you just never hear in the mainstream press when they're wanting to use Martin Luther King to prove a point. Okay?
Yeah.
So check that out at your leisure. But in June of 68, well, let me take it back to the spring, late winter, early spring of 68. A lot of people are not aware that at that time, early 68, late winter, early spring, Martin Luther King was working on the Poor People's Campaign, which was a interfaith, interracial pilgrimage to dramatize and lobby on behalf of poor people of all sorts, shapes, and sizes. The thing being, we were pouring untold billions of dollars down the rat hole known as the Vietnam War. And meanwhile, the Great Society, which was a grand idea when LBJ came up with it, and the war on poverty and getting the country right again, if it ever was right, was being outspent because there was no money for the social. It's the guns and butter theory, all right? But anyway, King was working on preparing the Poor People's Campaign in late winter, early spring of 68, when the sanitation workers in Memphis decided to hold an action against the city government there because the black workers are being treated quite unfairly in terms of working conditions and pay. So at their invitation, King went to Memphis to show support for the striking sanitation workers. And then by April, we all know what happened then.
Right.
Well, the Poor People's March, the Poor People's Campaign went on. And in May of 68, what was known was Resurrection City, which was basically a bunch of lean-tos that the people set up on the mall next to the Lincoln Memorial. If you're standing on the steps looking at the Washington Monument, to the right, that little grove of trees is where Resurrection City was. And at night, the people who came to Washington lived in these little lean-tos, and then in the daytime, they would go up to Capitol Hill and to the different federal agencies who were supposedly financing and overseeing the Great Society and these social programs to lobby on behalf of poor people. The thinking being that poverty and hard times goes across the landscape demographically, okay? And the root cause of many of the problems for people not moving forward and getting ahead in life has to do with their economic circumstances. That has to do with the lack of wisdom on the part of the government to put those resources in a way that's going to meaningfully change the lives of people, moving them from poverty in the direction of not poverty. So I as a youngster, I guess I was in eighth grade by then, that summer, took it upon myself to get on the bus and go to the Poor People's March, which was the big culminating event where they had speeches and songs and Hollywood celebrities were there in support. And just, It was a later version of the March on Washington from 1963. And I was so impressed by, first of all, my, even at that age, understanding that it is important to show support to worthy causes and to help address the plight of impoverished people, okay? And, you know, here we are, lo, these many years later. You know, Dr. King was killed in April of 68, which caused Washington and a lot of other cities to go up in flames. A lot of those neighborhoods in D.C., I know, and maybe some of these other cities, it has taken them the better part of 50 years to get reclaimed. And now, instead of being reclaimed on behalf of people who actually lived there when they were knocked down and burned up, it's all gentrified. So it serves as an
how many communities have we seen that gentrification take place?
Oh, God.
Look what was done to Harlem.
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah. Yeah.
We were talking about D.C. There are neighborhoods all over D.C. that have been made safe for what once would have been referred to as yuppies.
Yeah.
And now I don't know what, but the thing is, finding livable space. I mean, you know, the government of the United States runs, Scott, on the energies of 23-year-olds, because they're the ones who actually do all the heavy lifting inside the Congress. You know, the aides and the interns and whatnot. And the,
that's
and the,
a frightening
and,
thought.
But it's true.
I know.
But the thing, and they're very smart 23-year-olds. But the only way to live is to either be independently wealthy, or, you know, live with four or five or six or seven or eight other people in a rundown rented house.
Yeah. Well, even Congress people and senators will rent a townhouse or an apartment. Barack Obama, when he was in the Senate, had that. I forget who he was living with, but it was like two or three other congressional people all sharing a space, because even then the cost of housing and the availability of housing that was affordable, even for someone in that echelon, was not exactly, you know, prominent.
No, and, you know, I had seen this list that you sent me before, but I'm glad you resent it to me. This time I'm going to have the presence of mind to bookmark it, because there are quotes from Dr. King in here that you just know you're not going to hear over at Fox News, if they can be brought to mark the holiday at all. This one just leaps off the page. From a speech in 1967 called The Three Evils of Society. Again, we have deluded ourselves into believing the myth that capitalism grew and prospered out of the Protestant ethic of hard work and sacrifice. The fact is that capitalism was built on the exploitation and suffering of black slaves and continues to thrive on the exploitation of the poor, both black and white, both here and abroad. And you know what? There's not a word in that quote that is challengeable.
Right.
It's the absolute, unvarnished, unfly-blown truth.
Well, even before the nine quotes, okay, before I got down to that section of the article, in the text of the item, it said, next time you see Martin Luther King corrupted and misused as a tool of capitalism, racism, unchecked white supremacy, and war, recall that Martin Luther King said, a riot is the language of the unheard.
Sure.
Jesus, I damn near fell out of my chair, because he's been dead, God, almost 50 years now. So he had to have said it before 1968. And you look at where we were then and where we are now as a country and as a people, and the division. People say, oh, well, you know, we're living in a, you know, we've got a black president. We've got black people in places of prominence. So move on, nothing to see here, which is total horseshit. It's a process. And it's not just a process. It is an engagement in the hearts, minds, and souls of human beings to practice a little bit of empathy, okay, and say, you know, imagine yourself in someone else's position. This is my key to seeing whether a plan will work, okay, when they come up with these harebrained schemes in the GOP Congress. My question, primary question, first and foremost, is, okay, if it's so good, would you willingly trade places and take that on as your manner of being, okay, this thing that you're inflicting upon someone else? And obviously the answer is, well, no.
Not on your life. I mean, it's not well, no, it's oh, hell no.
Yeah, okay.
Because, and let me just mention another one of the quotes. And again, this is 1967. It is a radically different time from 2017, okay? 50 years ago. And, you know, today we walk around with these things in our hands, and I'm trying, and I'm as big a tech junkie as anybody out there. God, I love my gizmos and gadgets, especially because of what I do here. I try to follow trends, and there's some fascinating technology out there. If we ever get to the point we can do it, there's a mix board that it just fits in. I mean, and you know what I say when I say a 1U rack space. Mm-hmm. It fits in that rack space, and you can take an iPad and run an entire program off the iPad.
Yeah.
Now, theoretically, you could do it with what I've got here too. It just doesn't quite work out the same way.
Yeah.
But the gadgetry is amazing, and almost without fail. I won't say without fail, because there are some companies that are still in the United States that where people earn a decent living building this stuff. But in the majority, it's reminiscent of something that's the SIG line for Matt in San Francisco whenever he calls. You know how if you use a mobile device, it'll say, you know, set on my highfalutin Galaxy S Avogadro's number, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, when Matt in San Francisco writes, the SIG line on all of his emails say, sent from my overpriced communication device made in horrendous working conditions.
That's about right.
And it's absolutely true. So, and I mention that because with this quote, Dr. King shows himself to be not merely a nonviolent warrior for social, racial, and economic justice, but a little bit of a prophet too along the way. And that's, you know, dangerous business, that prophet business, because a prophet is always without honor in his own land. But in his Revolution of Values speech in 1967, it's number 4 on your list here. When machines and computers, profit motives and property rights are considered more important than people, the giant triplets of racism, extreme materialism, and militarism are incapable of being conquered.
That was 50 years ago. Now, how right was he, or is he?
He's getting more right every day.
Yes, I'm sure I
have no doubt that were he alive, he would probably be delivering sermons about put that, you know, if you're here to listen to me preach today, don't just put that thing in your pocket, turn it off. And maybe see what happens if you leave it off for the whole day.
Yeah.
You know, I was in the grocery store the other night, and I was standing in line because there was somebody in front of me who was violating the express lane law, and the express lane police had not been called. I think that person must have had 27 items in a 12-item line. But I just started looking around, and the number of people who were holding handheld devices and reading them or perusing them or scanning them or whatever, It was a fairly quiet time in the Kroger at the moment, but I would say it was fully half of the people who were in there. And okay, so maybe some of them are ticking off items on their grocery list. Okay, let's say that's a third. But there's still, you know, the 12-year-old little girl who's sitting there. And I mean, she's not even in the building. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so, you know, when I saw this quote, Scott, I went immediately there. When machines and computers, profit motives and property rights are considered more important than people, the giant triplets of racism, materialism, and militarism are incapable and conquered. It's that word incapable that gives me the chills. That means
It
won't happen. Racism will not be conquered. Extreme materialism will not be conquered. And militarism will not be conquered.
Well, and the amazing thing, Bob, is, and I've mentioned this before, I've talked about gigantic anti-war marches that I went to back in the late 60s, you know, numbering a quarter million, a half million. And that crowd showed up on the basis of maybe a dozen or more underground newspapers around the country, flyers handed out, word of mouth, phone calls from one activist to another, and mimeographed leaflets. Now, granted, the cause against which, the cause in favor of which the people showed up to demonstrate, you know, regarding the war, the immorality of that, and the unfairness of the draft, which by that time primarily was sending black and Hispanic kids 10,000 miles, you know, to get shot up or maybe even worse, to be severely wounded in their bodies or heads, never to be the same, okay? And the fact that there was a draft in those days, yes, that was part of it, but a big part of the reason people were showing up was to say, people, look what we're doing, to be prophets in our own way, to say, you know, Look where our resources, both in terms of treasure and the flower of our youth, look what you're doing to yourself, America. Stop it. Stop it.
But you know, there's so much depth to these things. I mean, just that one little quote there, Scott. Just because a historically discriminated against community now has access to the same little vindication of freedom. Although conversely, there's an argument to be made that access to things like the internet plays a big role in learning, in knowledge acquisition. Absolutely. But there's the issue of co-opting into the system. And of course, predatory capitalism is always going to work in that direction.
Well, yeah, because the bright and shiny thing in their mind is the thing to get someone's attention, the consumer, okay? Never mind looking beyond, you know, discussions of the size of Kim Kardashian's ass or, you know, the latest stupid Candy Crush game or whatever the hell people occupy their time with in today's world. Never mind that. What if you use this amazing technology, basically a computer in your goddamn pocket, in the way that we used underground newspapers, mimeographed leaflets, word of mouth, and social interaction to get people engaged and involved and present? What if that happened? A message could be sent. And we've seen an example that notion works simply because of the orange-colored ass clown that's going to be sworn in on Friday. But it worked for the other side. It didn't work for our side. And that's the damnable hell of it.
Well, it is, isn't it?
It is, and you've got me all riled up. I need to sit down.
Well, I didn't mean to. Punky, don't make Punky take you to the bathroom and make you yell at the mirror like you do to him.
I'll be in there before it's over, before this week is up, believe me.
By the way, Ron in the far frozen north had a note for you. He said, you can advise Punky's owner and psychiatrist that the Chargers had a purpose in the NFL. Some team had to serve as the baseline reference for the rest of the league. Also, I've been a big fan of Green Bay for years and for a couple of good reasons. One, they're routinely good year in and year out. And two, they're owned by the community, and it's easier, even in the off-kilter years, to get tickets to the final round of the Masters than it is to get tickets to a home game in Green Bay. By the way, the NFL currently bans community ownership, but grandfathered in the Packers when the rule was adopted. Wonder why. Yeah. So,
exactly.
Yeah. But all kidding aside, I really do. I appreciate this list because
MLK Day is taught as a sort of a history unit in schools. Can you begin to imagine? Now, I'm not talking about teaching second graders, but say, you know, sixth graders are old enough to start getting a handle on some of this stuff. Can you imagine trying to teach in the United States of America, Scott, a sixth grader about the difference between capitalism and socialism?
Well, it's a worthwhile enterprise that they be aware of it.
Right, but in any community,
war stuff.
But in any community where you tried that, there would be pitchforks and torches, because that's another part of the problem. Capitalism has been co-opted as an article of a national religion.
Yeah, well, look at, and here's, I'll have to send you this link the other day. Herman Vincent Peale, you remember him, the guy who wrote Power of Positive Thinking?
Oh, God, yes.
Well, he was also the pastor of a big church in Manhattan, and whose family back in the 40s and 50s do you think attended Norman Vincent's big church in Manhattan?
Oh, let me guess, the Trumps?
I'll give you a hint. Yeah, I'll send you that article, because he wasn't just about positive thinking, the thing that really made him famous to the mass of society. He was one of those people, like so many religious folks, you know, communism bad, capitalism, you know, will of God, you know.
Of course, Billy Graham was right there in the thick of that all along too.
Yeah, yeah, and that was all of that came in the late 30s, early to mid to late 30s, and being entered into during Roosevelt's administration in the wake of the Depression. Some author looked back at the rise of religious fundamentalism in today's world, as it shows up in this country, in terms, you know, God's will for us all, and basically the mindset that has given us Trump, springs directly out of that notion, okay. Only now he's throwing us a curve, because I don't know what they're doing in Russia. But if he were any closer to Putin, he being Trump, he'd be behind him, to quote an old Groucho Marx. It's like we've gone through the fucking looking glass, Bob. Each new day is an adventure. And I haven't done this for a long time, since at least the events of 9/11 and the weeks after that. I wake up every morning before I fire up the computer or the TV, you know, how bad's it going to be today? What new outrage and manifestation of madness will I be greeted by this morning? And that's no way to live.
No, it's not. But do you see? I mean, did you hear earlier today? And this is the, gosh, I'm glad I have people to talk to part of the program, because
you know, I was when I was listening to the radio, I had to drive over to our daughter's house and back today, and that's about 200-mile round trip. And so, I was barking at the mile markers when All Things Considered came on. Did you catch the latest? I mean, I hate to refer to it so glibly or gratuitously, Scott, as the outrage du jour, but goddamn, did you hear what Trump told what was it, the Observer, down for an interview with, actually? Did you catch this one?
No, I didn't hear about that. No.
He's rooting for the breakup of the EU. You know, because having 50 years of not having an abattoir opened in Western Europe and just watching Western Europe slaughter itself like it tends to do every 20 or 30 or 40 years, absent sort of a unification. Yeah, well, you know, we're so bored. So there was that. And then he also said that NATO is obsolete.
Yeah, I did see the NATO headline, but I didn't get to the article yet. Well, he's been saying words. You say it was the Observer?
Yeah.
Okay, so he's preaching it on their home soil, basically, at least through the Observer.
I'm sorry. No, it wasn't the. It was the Times of London.
Okay,
I took such heat when I said NATO was obsolete. It's obsolete, taken care of. I took a lot for 2 days, and then they started saying Trump is right. A lot of these countries aren't paying what they're supposed to be paying, which I think is very unfair to the United States. With that being said, NATO is very important to me. There's 5 countries that are paying what they're supposed to. 5. It's not much.
Well, and isn't that the classic definition of a cynic?
Classic definition of something that was scripted by Big Bad Vladdy Daddy?
Yeah, but looking at it from a slightly different angle, they know the price of everything, but the value of nothing. And isn't the Times of London, isn't that a Murdoch paper?
Maybe.
I'm pretty sure it is.
A
lot of people relate him to tabloids, but I'm pretty sure that among his acquisitions were old, staid Times of London 4 years back.
Let's see, he called the Union.
Well, hell,
it's a vehicle for Germany. That's straight out of the PR the PR dungeon of the Russian government. And he criticized Angela Merkel for letting participating in letting in people who would otherwise the civil war in Syria. I mean,
that's how he rabbles the rouses the rabble here at home. But another audience he might be talking to, it's that Putin line, you know? That's putting it mildly. Because everybody's future hangs on, theoretically and probably literally, could very well hang on the next tweet that this guy sends out there because of the latest bug up his ass. Or something belonging to Putin up his ass.
By the way, did you see the cold open from Saturday Night Live?
Oh yes, the press conference.
It may be the most brilliant one yet. And
thank you for peeing here.
Thank you for peeing here. I mean, here. Pissing here. I mean, but you know, having I can't remember the cast member's name standing up there shirtless, you know, with his gold necklace. I am American media personality Wolf Blitzer. Are you sure it was Russians? And holds up an old VHS cassette that says PP tape.
Yes, yes.
but there's a cultural moment there, because in fascist regimes,
about the only way you can criticize the fascist regime is with comedy. And even still, it drove that thin-skinned little piss ant out of his mind and onto the Twitter.
Have you ever seen Donald Trump laugh? I never have.
No, I have no.
Have you?
No.
Have you ever heard him mention in an interview? I mean, think of the multiple millions of words this man has spewed in interviews. Have you ever heard him talk about music that makes him think or moves his heart and soul? Probably not. And I'm not counting Lee Greenwood music at a rally, okay? I'm talking about a human being, so-called, he supposedly is, a human being expressing a side of oneself that reflects his humanness, okay? You never see it. Music, emotions. God knows he doesn't have empathy. Not that I've been able to.
I can't even begin to imagine him dancing. Did you know, though, that bookies are giving 4-1 on him being impeached in the first 6 months?
Yeah, I saw that.
But I think those are some silly bookies. He isn't going to be impeached by a Republican Congress.
No, that's. I mean, what would?
Well,
he
I mean, to okay, do? So they're 4. Yeah, okay. That's they're smart. The bookies have it about right. But anybody who would say, "Oh hell, I'll put I'll put a dime on that," no. That's going to be money thrown away on whatever the official date is. What, June 20th, something like that.
Yeah, that's well February, March, April, May. So the. You may, yeah, June 20th sounds about right, the first 4 months. It's going to be an interesting future, and to the extent that I'm able, I'll do what I can. But sometimes you look at this, the ignorance of the people, the hatefulness of the people, the division in the country, the utter lack of resources that were willingly pissed away on enterprises that have made things worse and not better. And you, even an optimist, you know, even a cheerful person has to look at where we find ourselves and say, we've been through a lot of things. We've gotten out of a lot of situations. Can we make it through this? And I find myself falling into that. And you know, I mean, what's the alternative? I've got to either work out some scenario where we can and then be in a manner consistent with working through and surviving at the very least, or climb something high or tall and fall. I mean, there's your A and your B choices.
That's a nasty little Kobayashi Maru, and there's our obligatory Star Trek reference for the evening.
Well, some people have a C choice in the equation, and that is to tune out completely, to talk about Kardashian's ass or whatever's in social media and play some crazy video game app. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
None of the options. I mean, survival's a bare minimum in terms of an expectation as you go through a situation out to the other side. You know,
and look, I mean, I don't know how many simpletons there are. I'm not talking about the Horn Family Community Congregation, Scott. I don't know how many simpletons there are out there. Apparently, the number of Trumpanzees is an indication that there are some several tens of millions. But in addition to the other goofy shit that he's saying, he's now saying, we're going to repeal and replace Obamacare because it's a disaster. It's like totally not fantastic. And we're going to replace it with coverage for everybody with low deductibles, low cost, and freedom.
Well, the only way...
And that's just not possible. I mean, okay, Medicare for all, yeah. Universal single-payer health care, sure. Now, show me the Republican Congress that's going to pass that.
the only remote possibility that, let's say, Medicare for All could be implemented, if only as a stopgap until they figure out what they've got the repeal part down. It's the replace part that's kind of stumping them, okay? Because you got to figure, if they had come up with a way to replace it that does what the original did, then they would have proposed it by now, and we could all look at it and say, well, gee, that's not a bad idea. But they haven't. That's why we haven't seen it. The only conceivable immediate replacement for ACA would be Medicare for All. But, and the only way that even a Republican Congress could bring that into being would be if Trump takes to the bully pulpit and uses it the way I wish Obama had used it more, and actually motivate the peace to let them know that we put you in there, but we sure as hell take you out of there too. And even that is a long shot.
Well,
look at what Reagan did. Every time Reagan proposed something of a great magnitude, he would, at some point in the presentation, he would remind the voters to let Congress know. Show them that you support me. Okay? And not stuff was worth supporting, but he sure as hell got stuff done, as bad as that stuff was.
You know, if we could get universal single-payer health care in the form of Medicare for All, I don't care if they call it Freedom Trump Care. But that's, I mean, I'm comfortable saying that is not going to happen.
No, it's probably not. But if there were a way to do it, the clearest way that I would see would be Trump getting on the bully pulpit and basically stirring up people to raise hell with Congress until they comply.
Also in this latest string of pronouncements, he's declared that he personally, Trump, will impose a 35% tariff on German automobiles.
That's a neat trick if you can do it, but...
Well, see, there's... It's about halfway sane. The president has the right to levy a tariff of up to 15% for 150 days. So that's 5 months, roughly. And if he does that, there's not any real way to challenge that. Even as Simon Evanet in this Reuters story, professor of international trade at the University of St. Gallen in Switzerland, he said, even if foreign companies object and seek to challenge the legality of tariffs, it will take at least 18 months to get decided. Corporate strategies will be disrupted by then. And so he thinks he's gonna bully, like BMW. He's gonna bully BMW out of putting $1 billion into a new plant in Mexico. And all I can do is say that I the more people who give into his bullying, the worse it gets.
Well, let's look at that for a second. I know I've been on here a while, but is it bullying in the sense of what we were talking before, in terms of Medicare for All, let's say? I don't see that it would be bullying if he motivated people who want health care. They don't. If all the surveys indicate people don't want their health care to go away, okay, even his supporters. So then is it bullying if he motivates them to motivate Congress to implement a decent replacement if they are intent on getting rid of Obamacare?
No, that's strictly within the realm of domestic politics. There's a reason that moments like that are referred to as the president using the bully pulpit, a phrase I believe coined by Theodore Roosevelt.
Yeah.
That's how it's supposed to work. I personally do not think, Scott, for one millisecond, that there's anybody inside his circle who can come up with something like universal single payer. Because he is, but he is surrounded by a bunch of typical garden variety, fiscal conservative, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing Republicans.
Well, and in the case of health care and Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security, look at who he nominated to be the head of Health and Human Services.
Right. Tom Price.
So it's entirely possible that he's tap dancing until he gets sworn in and doesn't know anything. And that will be, once it's too late, okay, or not easily changed, people will begin to catch on that he doesn't know a thing. He speaks in 140 character chunks, doesn't know anything, and half of what he does know, or two-thirds of what he does know, is wrong. Okay? We're not only through the look, but once you've gone through the looking glass, you go down the hall, there's another looking glass that we're going through, which is even stranger than the first one we've been through. And Helen Keller, and this will be my closing quote. Helen Keller had a quote that I've always held close to my heart. She said, "Life is either an amazing adventure or it is nothing." Welcome to the amazing adventure.
Well, yeah.
Bring fresh underwear, okay?
Yeah, no kidding.
several pairs, boys and girls, because you very well may need it.
Exactly. Scott, good talking to you this evening. I really appreciate the conversation.
Okay, thank you, Bob, and take care. Have a good rest of your week.
I'm gonna try. Yeah, you'll be around, I hope, and so will Punky.
Well, I'll send you my link to the article, 23 Easy Steps to Turn a Doll's Head into a Wine Glass. I swear to you, I'll put it on my Facebook. You can probably see it there. But that's great. If you see, Black Friday, formerly known as Inauguration Day, okay, is going to present an opportunity.
No, that was Inauguration Day 2009 and 2013. That was your Black Friday. I mean, because well, Obama.
You ain't seen black, boys and girls. This is a black that you cannot dance to, okay, or something. But anyway, let me let you go. I'll send you.
All right, you take care, Scott. Have a good evening.
All right, Bob. See ya.
Bye now. Ron in the far frozen north says, as far as the 35% tariff is concerned, what do I care? I got mine. Seriously, this is stupid. If only because BMW exports more vehicles made in the U.S. than any U.S. manufacturer. Those are decent paying American jobs. That depends on how you define decent. 12, 13 bucks an hour in South Carolina is probably real decent. But, you know, it just goes to show that he thinks everything's a real estate deal. It isn't. He thinks that he can bring the same powers to bear that he used on drapery contractors on outfits like BMW or VW Porsche Audi. Or Toyota, for that matter. I mean, did it ever occur to him that there are plants already in the United States that BMW could look at him and say, "Oh, really? Okay. Yeah, you want to bitch about a factory in Mexico? What do you say we shut down the one in South Carolina, you fucking punk?" Oh, they're going to love you down in South Trumpalina once we close that shit down. And sooner or later, that's exactly what's going to have to happen because, you know, you can't, if you just let a toddler have his way, then you will do nothing but reward the toddler's bad behavior. And make no mistake, this man is a toddler. This man is someone
to whom no one ever said no. I mean, how's he gonna impose a 35% tariff when the law itself only says that he can do 15 for 150 days? Does he really want to start a trade war with the whole world? God Almighty, state-run media in China now says that it's openly snickering at him. And he said, and now he's made offering deals. Well, I think we could like lift the sanctions on Russia if they would like reduce their nuclear stockpiles. Tremendous, huge, unbelievable. At what point in time does the Purity Brigade stop wallowing around with Putin and realize that this guy is a foreign agent going into the White House, that he is the tool of a foreign power? I mean, as I've said before, we do have some history with this, and that was General James Wilkinson, who was in the pay of the Spanish crown and very nearly did profound harm to the United States. Well, we're well past very nearly. David in South Carolina, Stan writing, South Trumpalina, says the strategy of splitting Dems by getting progressives to adopt GOP talking points about Hillary Clinton worked to perfection and is still working. I still see DNC stole election from Bernie comments. Oh, God, yeah, I know. I'm still dealing with it, too, and frankly, I've lost patience with it. Because, among other things, on this day of all days, maybe it would be a good time for the hardcore purity neophytes to stop telling millions of African American voters that they were wrong and the white folks were right. We discussed this during the primaries. The black community, you know, monolith that it is not, had its own reasons for supporting Hillary Clinton, not the least of which is the fact that they knew her and they did not know Bernie Sanders. And if they didn't know Bernie Sanders, that's not Hillary Clinton's fault. But the fact of the matter is, the numbers don't change. Bernie lost by a lot of votes nationally. I'm not talking about superdelegates. I'm talking about people going to the polls in South Carolina and Alabama and Tennessee and Mississippi and Georgia. Okay? And North Carolina and Louisiana. Because there are still Democrats there. It's just that the state organizations are moribund. In New York, Steve, a member of the Fraternity of Steve, says, subject line, orange dickweed. This is exactly why a businessman is not a good thing to be president. Presidents have a thing called Congress. Businessmen don't. And that's true. Businessmen, at worst, have a board. And the board has shareholders, and anybody who's ever watched democracy take place inside a board meeting knows that there ain't no democracy in no board meeting. Yeah. Hey, he's been caught in another lie. The New York Times reporting that Trump said he has stayed away from deals in Russia In fact, he repeatedly sought business there starting in the 1980s. The president-elect's favorable comments about President Putin and the conclusion of the United States intelligence officials that Moscow acted to help Donald J. Trump's campaign have focused attention on his business interests in Russia. But the fact of the matter is, he's lying again. Of course, the New York Times won't say anything so crass as, well, heavens to Murgatroyd, he's lying again. Yeah. If you want to engage in the conversation, you're welcome to. It's 23 minutes past the hour. About, 30 minutes or so, 35 minutes of conversation left in the program. Big thanks going out to Darlene in Connecticut. Thank you, Darlene. $67 to go in matching Yukio's MLK Day challenge. Thank you, Darlene. So about $50 to go, and that challenge will be met. Thank you very much indeed. Could it be? Is it possibly? I think it is. Thomas?
Yes, it is. Hello, my friend.
Well, I was doing good till I looked over at the streamer and realized we're buffering all to hell, but hopefully we'll get through it.
Yeah, I you know, it's funny. I Skype number, well, phrase that our ambassador, Jules Frazier, pays for a Skype number in and Skype number out because she's an awesome contributor to the program and volunteer to FYI Nation. And ever since we started paying for it, I swear to God, service has gotten worse.
You know, that can Enough. Be that can be broadly referenced on a the minute
you know,
we started paying
I mean,
for it, it got
like,
worse.
What the the reason I wanted to call you was about this Connecticut groper guy. Because
oh, I'm so glad you did, because Carol pointed him out to me yesterday. And dude has got to be, I mean, he's got More and Monday written all over him.
Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna be talking about him on my show that comes up next. And I totally let people go to him. I'm not. But this pisses me off because there's such a double standard with how this gets treated. This guy should be nailed to the cross for what he did.
Well, he has at least been charged with a crime. I mean,
well, true.
Take your victories.
And
you
it's
know?
Alleged. Yeah, true. And it's of course alleged and everything else. But that being
well,
said,
well, it's alleged
you know,
to the extent that it's on fucking video.
Well, yeah. Very, very, and that. But that being said, here's the other thing. If this was like Brian Fisher's cause du jour of a transgender person doing this in a bathroom, oh my God, the right wing would be all over this.
Yeah, and hold on a minute, Thomas. Let's give people a little bit of background on this. We're talking about. A creepy old dude named Christopher von Kaiserling of Greenwich, Connecticut. He's described as a well-known Greenwich Republican.
Of course.
And he was engaged in a conversation with a woman long about noon December 8th in the hallway of an unnamed Greenwich town facility.
Okay.
They had a brief interchange about politics.
Okay.
And the woman said, "A new world politically." And he responded, "I love this new world. I no longer have to be politically correct." She said, "Well, if you're proud of that, I can't help you." He responded by calling her a lazy, blood-sucking union employee. She said, "Fuck you," and her office, the office, claiming her coworker. Coworker walks in, says she doesn't have to talk to him, walks out. And then the 57 decides to walk out, too, because she didn't want to be alone with him. And as he walked by,
of course,
in the crotch.
And she said, if you ever do that again, I'll punch your lights out.
And very smart on her.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, but wait, it gets better. I mean, this guy is more and material for a reason. When she said, if you ever do that again, I'll punch your lights out, or whatever she said.
Mm-hmm.
She then said, quote, he looked back with a really evil look in his eyes and said, it would be your word against mine and nobody will believe you.
Jesus.
So then she reported to
just
the
sat him.
So then she reported him to the cops and said she didn't want a warrant issued for him.
Mm-hmm.
But here's where it gets kind of fun. The cops went and talked to him. He explained that, yeah, it all happened. It was just a big misunderstanding. In the warrant, which did get issued, he related mm-hmm. that he was sorry he penned it has got this out of hand. So apparently he then continued being an asshole, and she went back to police, the police headquarters, and said, screw this, I do want to press charges.
Good for her.
Yeah.
Good for her.
And she said she came back because once her story got out, it turned out that this guy has a case of the gropies and has had a case of the gropies and the grabbies with other women. So then police talked to her. They talked to him. And mm-hmm. when she didn't want to talk about it anymore, he said, was this about the little pinch? And then said it was a joke. Couldn't believe that she could be offended by it. And said, well, you know, we've got that kind of relationship, me and her. It's one of those where, like, I like to, like, embarrass people. I mean, what this was, you know, it was a gig. I gigged my own daughter to embarrass her.
I mean, what the fuck?
So now, I mean, the good part of this is that he's been arrested for fourth-degree sexual assault. It was only worth a $2,500 bond, and he shows up back in court on January the 25th.
Okay.
But there's more. One, as I pointed out in conversation with Carol, it's your word against mine, and they'll believe me only works when you don't admit that her word is the correct word on tape mm-hmm. to the cops.
Yeah.
So there's that.
Yeah.
But now I seldom ask you about your personal details. You've been mentioned being in Ohio, but you also have mentioned some passing familiarity with the state of Michigan.
Bob, I am an open book. I am like a Book of Mormon. Ask me anything, and I will tell
you. Well, I mean, so you've lived in Michigan?
I'm in Michigan right now. In fact, we're in Flint, in Flint Township.
Okay, so can you tell Warren is?
Warren is like a Detroit suburb.
Okay, it's enough of a suburb that it has its own mayor.
Yes.
And the mayor of Warren, Michigan, is Jim Fouts.
Yes.
And I'm glad you brought up Herr von Kaiserling in Greenwich, Connecticut, because he has a spirit brother in Warren, mm-hmm. Michigan.
Of course he does.
Now, at one point in time, Jim Fouts of Warren, Michigan, mayor, had a radio show. But on 9:10 a.m. the radio supers. But he Ooh. Got canned mm-hmm. from that job in December when he somehow or another a microphone caught him saying that disabled people, and this is a quote, aren't even human beings.
That's right out of the Nazi playbook there.
Or Trump, same.
No, yeah. I guess I qualify because of my back, and that's fine.
So, he then, you know, kind of the way Trump says, It's fake news that he, you know, paid for a pee-pee party. This recording is not me. Well, we're going to find out what his voice sounds like, because that wasn't all that he said.
Ooh.
You ready for this?
Oh, please give me. Give it to me.
You know, blacks do look like chimpanzees. I was watching this black woman with her daughter, and they look like two chimps. Their mouths were elongated out, you know, a duckish look.
Wow.
Yeah. And
Bob,
Herr Von Kaiserling is 71. Warren, Michigan Mayor Jim Fouts is 74. But anyway, you were going to say?
I don't normally bring in my daughter or my family, because I don't like I don't want anybody thinking I'm a great father, because I'm not. And my mother has been, or her mother has been, a wonderful mother raising her child, because I have not been the best father in the world because of personal stuff that I've had to deal with. And I come from a multiracial family. And when I hear stuff like that, it inflames me to no end, because my daughter gets teased because she looks too white. And is not quite black enough when she was going to public school. And that's why, and we had to end up, at one point we had to, you know, and I'd probably get killed by my ex for telling the story, but it goes into this. It kills me that this is in 2017, and we're all human, for fuck's sake. And stupid, yes. Cowardly, yes, sometimes. But we're all human. And when I hear stuff like this, it just inflames me. And it hurts. It hurts my heart, because my daughter is the most beautiful young lady in the world. And her mother raised her magnificently, and for all the faults that we may sometimes have together, as you know, because we're not together anymore, obviously, I can't be more proud of what she's done for my daughter, and I just can't stand anyone who thinks that you are not what you're supposed to be because of a race, when that's not even a thing, really. When it gets down to
brass. Yeah, when that's an artificial construct in the first place. Well,
exactly.
If there's anything to be said for Jim Fouts, 74-year-old mayor of Warren, Michigan, and former right-wing talk show host, you know, of course, he wants to be the total package. He's not happy just referring to disabled people as non-human. He's not happy just referring to black people as chimpanzees. He also has very discriminating tastes about who he, Jim Fouts, 74 years old, is willing to date.
Think I want to date a fucking 60-year-old hag? Fuck that shit. I'm not interested in any old ugly hag. I think after a certain age, they're all dried up, washed up, burned out.
He has standards, you see, Thomas. He doesn't want to date any 60-year-old women, who, I might add, would be 14 years younger than him. Because, you know, the 60-year-olds are dried up. But you get into trouble when you start trying to go after the young ones, too, you see.
They're pussies when they're young, and when they get old, they're just mean, hateful, dried-up old cunts.
That there is what you call some Republican family values.
Absolutely. And the sad part in it is that, you know, they're they're able to get away with it. And if it was a Democrat or a progressive who did something like this, it would not be tolerated, and it shouldn't be tolerated, clearly. But it would be thrown into the lake of fire. Thankfully so. But my question to you with all this is, I guess, is when we have, 4 days until Trump Stilskin becomes the president of the United States? And
yeah, I know. I mean, this is bottom of the ninth, two outs, 3-2 count, and, you know, you're down three runs.
Yeah, and I got to say, I know Rosie O'Donnell got a lot of slack for it, and I know we were worried about George W. Bush doing this because of President Obama as progressives, but I do kind of like her idea of declaring martial law and just be like, whatever.
Well, just in terms of punking the punk.
Exactly.
Ron in the far frozen north had the best idea I've heard yet. Long about Wednesday, Barack Obama needs to resign.
Mm-hmm.
So that Joe Biden will immediately be sworn in for like one day as the 45th president of the United States.
Wow.
Just to ruin all the marketing merch.
Yes.
For the inauguration.
That, you know what, that is absolutely amazing, Bob, that Ron said that, because Rory Boyd of Reality Check with Rory said the same thing at the beginning of his show today at 4 o'clock this afternoon. We had that same exact conversation for about 5 minutes.
Well, see, we had a chance back before the Electoral College met. You may recall this conversation. We had a chance to really, really let the long knives come out inside the GOP. If Obama and Biden had simply resigned before the Electoral College met, that would have made Paul Ryan the president of the United States. And then they would have gone at each other with everything: rocks, sticks, knives, forks, melon ballers, whatever came to hand. The Trump faction versus the Republican, you know, old guard, and it would have been a beautiful thing to behold.
Oh, it would have. It absolutely would.
While the Democrats just sat back and popped popcorn.
Yeah. No.
Now you want some? This is going to be good.
You know.
But we're grasping at straws.
Oh, I know, but we're having a little bit of fun.
Because we are, but and we've got to keep laughing.
Yes.
And mercifully, I don't think Alec Baldwin is going to quit. And if there's any silver lining, the piss ant may have a stroke.
Yes. I don't know. I know you've been concerned about me and what I've been going through, because I've been dealing with my anxiety and depression, which has really been kicking my ass lately. And I thank you for that, Bob. I asked for a friend, and I'm asking the Horn Family Commune, if you are a Trump voter, does that make you a pissant? I'm just asking for a friend.
I think you probably know where I come down on that. There are, when it comes to the act of voting for Trump, I don't care if you've never missed a day of church. I don't care if you, I don't care if you actively go out looking for little old ladies to help cross the street. I don't care if you save kittens from burning trees. That simple act of voting for Trump was an act of extreme hate.
Yes.
Nastiness, ignorance, and brutality toward a majority of the people in your own country. So
pissant is one of the milder terms I think one might use.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm trying to be like on my show because I'm trying to take Bernie's advice and go with issues because we win on the issues when we explain them. But sometimes we do have fun and we do call names. And, you know, like my favorite one at present, you know, our friend Dr. Chaps, right?
Absolutely.
Yes. I call him Gordon Klinger shit.
Yeah, that's almost too easy.
You know, I know, but I'm easy, you know, and we still need to have that talk.
I like to go for the cerebral stuff, like, you know, a million units of penicillin will cure your Klingenschmidt.
Fair enough. But see, this is why you are the radio veteran, and I am just earning my chops here on FYI.
Learn you must, young Padawan.
Yes, and I can't appreciate you more. Every day. And could I, if you don't mind, do a quick plug?
Absolutely. Plug it right into the wall.
Okay. Two things. One, Lou Hastings of the Red Road Radio Show is back live from his bout with pneumonia and being ill over the holiday season. And he will have a brand new show at 11 o'clock. So after Malloy is done, if you guys want to join us, I suggest you do because he's fired up and ready to go. And it's going to be a great show for the hour before Tom Hartman comes on FYNation.com. And also, I know you are a writer over there, and I know Tara Devlin's a writer because it's her site, but RepublicanDirtyTricks.com.
Yes. Thank you. I've been meaning to do that, and I haven't written a blessed thing there yet, but this is an up-and-coming, fun site. It's been rebuilt and redesigned and retooled, and there are good things happening at RepublicanDirtyTricks.com.
Yes, absolutely. And Tara is, I'll tell you what, Bob, I have asked Tara every Wednesday to come since I did my first interview with her. Months ago, since Nikki Goldenheart, my former co-host, who has had some difficult issues and stuff that I won't get into like everybody else. But she introduced me to her, and Tara has been the best, contributor to the show, never saying no and always fighting the resistance.
Oh, Tara's freaking awesome. Okay. I mean, she's a wonderful human being to be around. She is a delightful wit.
Yes.
And she's great when you need when you're out playing wheelman for Malloy when he's busy getting arrested at a protest.
Yes, and not only that,
and she can find parking places in New York City.
And by the way, well, she's better than George Costanza, of course. Who isn't? But that. That being said, she is on Wednesdays at 10 o'clock, and we have everything paywall free. So if you can't, if you want to listen to Malloy live and then crossover or whichever, I suggest you check out that. And she has her own show on Saturday called The Terror Buster at 7 o'clock and replayed on Progressive Voices at 6. So either way, you can catch it. I suggest the live version because sometimes she allows call-ins, and to have a discussion with Tara is just one of the most amazing things that you could ever do, and you know this, Bob, and I really suggest it. And
Well, maybe the second best, because the best is to actually go to Katz's Deli with her in Lower Manhattan.
I haven't gotten to do that, but when I go home back to Connecticut, my birthplace, I was born in New Haven, Connecticut. When I go home, I am taking the train down to New York City, and I am going to look Tara up, and hopefully I won't scare the hell out of her and her poor cats.
Well, no, you will have a magnificent time. Tara's I'm glad you brought up both topics, because I should have before. And I hope people will begin to, well, if they're not already, spend a lot of time going to RepublicanDirtyTricks.com.
Yes, and I do highly recommend, again, paywall free, and you can find it on iTunes. It's called TerraBuster, and it is brilliant. It is the therapy session for the resistance. So if you're feeling down and out about what's coming up, she will help you out and pick you up, and you will be in the background. I caught myself unmuting one time and giving her an amen, and she yelled at me for it. But,
well, of course.
I don't know that, but she's just absolutely brilliant, and I couldn't be prouder to executive produce her show.
Wonderful. And are you feeling some better?
I am doing better, and it's just the holidays hit really hard for me because of personal stuff and my daughter's birthday and not being able to be near her, and I count my blessings that she has an amazing mother. Me and her do not always get along, but she actually has two shows on our network. We get along enough to be able to do shows together and stuff like that, and she was on our New Year's Eve show. So that's how well we do get along. But as a couple, we didn't work out. That being said, she is the most amazing mother to my daughter, and she just makes me so proud and of her, and that does help. And thank you for asking, Bob.
Well, you're part of the family, so it only, you know, it only stands to reason.
And I appreciate that. And I'm gonna I've been meaning to do this, but this weekend I promise you I'm gonna shoot you an email about the iTunes, and maybe we can get together at some point over Skype or something. And I can help you out with that.
Do the
okay?
walkthrough on that. That would be great.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you for the call, Thomas. I always enjoy our conversations. And thank you for reminding me about dear Mr. Von Kaiserling of Greenwich, Connecticut.
Amen. And I'm glad to be with you, as always, Bob.
All right. Take care, Thomas. Bye now. From FYINation.com, our buddy, Thomas. And by all means, do Red Road Radio Show. Check that out, as well as Thomas himself and Terra Busters. And by all means, go to RepublicanDirtyTricks.com. You will be glad you did. You did so. Michael and Madison pointing out, based on something that Thomas said, subject line: winning on issues. And I almost picked that one up as well. The only problem with that is that issues don't run for office. And ain't it the damn truth? Healthcare is apparently something even Trump pansies want to keep having. But they went to the polls and sent people to office who are extra super duper double plus awful, eager to take that healthcare away. And as for me, if I have no patience to talk about the, oh, Jesus, the DNC, Hillary, oh, shit, blah, 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 it's because I'm worried about things like healthcare. I know that. I know it's kind of selfish, but that's where I am. Maybe if you're progressive and you live in a state where your healthcare is not going to be impacted, maybe it's not as terrifying. But here in West Trump, Virginia, it's a goddamn nightmare waiting to happen for just about the entire state. There just aren't that many people who have access to health care that isn't some way affected by the Affordable Care Act. And then there's Medicare, which Paul Ryan has been dreaming, salivating, furiously masturbating over destroying ever since the first time he read Atlas Shrugged. I know, Gerald. Gerald says, healthcare? Jeez, Bob, it's all about you, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I know. Michael also pointed out, subject line, George Costanza. Hey, speaking of George Costanza, for whatever reason, when I heard about Trump's latest empty promise of insurance for everybody, I immediately recalled George's fake charity, the Human Fund, Money for People. Oh, God, I'd forgotten about the Human Fund. And, you know, in the era in which we now live, would you be surprised to find out that that was a Trump charity? I read somewhere, maybe it was Charlie Pierce, saying that, a sports analogy, the Trump presidency is going to be like the Billy Martin, George Steinbrenner era of the Yankees was for Yankees fans, only this is going to be life and death, and it's going to involve the entire nation. It is not something about which I am excited. And Robert in Australia reminded me, I'm surprised Marty didn't, but another one is gone. Eugene A. Cernan, has died at the age of 82. Last man to walk on the moon. He led a life that most people could only dream of. To the end of his days, he encouraged young people to study science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. And as the last human being to stand on the moon, he said, "This is Gene, and I'm on the surface. And as I take man's last step from the surface back home for some time to come, but we believe not too long into the future, I'd like just to say what I believe history will record, that America's challenger today has forged man's destiny of tomorrow. And as we leave the moon at Taurus Littrow, we leave as we came, and God willing, as we shall return with peace and hope for all mankind. Godspeed, the crew of Apollo 17. And such were the and such was the majesty of the adventure with which I was raised as a child. Should have been on Mars by now, but that dream got dashed. There's a documentary, and Scott just reminded me, and I was there's a documentary on Netflix called The Last Man on the Moon. It took 9 years to make it. It's based on Eugene Cernan's 1999 memoir. It's worth your time. Because somewhere out there we do... I know, we can send robots, but... There's something about human exploration of space. And the hope that maybe we're better at exploring places we've never been before than maybe we were when the white folks were finding out the world wasn't flat and all of that. There are all kinds of different dreams. If we could get the one that Dr. King talked about right down here, we might be better people as we looked beyond this pale blue dot. So it's time to get on out of here. I want to send thanks to David for knocking out almost the rest of the of Yukio's challenge. Thank you, David. We have $26.67 to go to finish that challenge. Thank you very much to everybody who helped with that. Thank you very much indeed. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox. The website redesign is looking great. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks, as always, to to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, everybody. Titanic Tuesday is just around the corner.